Yes, my name is Tracy Bentham, and my date of birth is 21st of the 8th, 59.
And I'm the middle one. I have an older sister and a younger brother. My parents were, I would say, working class. My mother was the matron of a children's day nursery run by the council, and my dad was a foreman at the Oxo factory in Great Orwood. I passed my 11 plus and went on to do O levels and A levels at the Accrington High School for girls. We were very typical. We had a big family in Rishton, lots of cousins, lots of uncles, aunties, grandparents close by. Very traditional for the 60s and 70s growing up. I was mostly interested in art, and I think I was quite good because I always got top of the class and A's, but I also liked English. Not so much on the maths and sciences, but I think at primary school, that's, I did quite well on them all because nothing's that much in depth. But once I got to the high school, yes, I certainly did favour the arts rather than sciences. My mother was is a bright lady. She had quite a good job, but it was very much in the field of childcare and not so much the academia. I wasn't really driven to think about university until I got to the high school, but that environment fostered, the learning in order to go to university. That what it was all about. That if you didn't want to go to university, you should have gone to a secondary modern. It was a bit that was the ethos. But as far as family was concerned, nobody else in my family had gone to university, so it wasn't expected. It wasn't discouraged, it just wasn't thought of, really. Virtually no careers advice. I had, under fifth form, when we were all moving on to A-levels, we were called into the headmistress's study, and we'd queue up outside. I got in, barely sat down, and the gentleman behind the desk said, "Are you doing A-levels?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Send the next girl in, please." And then after A-levels, I went to the town hall with my mum because I hadn't got onto a course that I wanted to get onto. So I went to get some advice from them, and they said I should forget my art and just have it as a hobby and go and work in an office. So that was the sum total, I'm afraid. My mother thought that was quite sound advice. I think they were of the generation where getting a job was the main thing, and knuckling down and starting a family, the traditional way. So she did say, "Well, you want to consider that?" It wasn't that she really forced me, but I think she was sort of the opinion that that seemed to be a good idea, just get an office job. I applied to Preston University, it was a college then, and to do fashion design. But it was a four-year sandwich course, and I didn't have the right portfolio. They advised me to go back, do a foundation course, to give them something to go off, really. I think they were trying to judge me on a very slim portfolio, which was fair enough, but I didn't want to do another year of studying and then a four-year course. So I decided to apply for jobs in the area, and I had applied to Gaskell Carpets during that summer, but there were no vacancies, and they just said they'd put me on file. But in the meantime, I heard of a course at Blackburn College doing textile design as a degree. So I actually joined that course a few weeks late, but they were happy to have me on the course, so they said it didn't matter. And then I was there for a month, and I got a letter from Gaskell saying that actually a vacancy had come free, and would I like to interview for it? It was a bit of a dilemma. I was kind of enjoying the course, albeit only for a month, but it felt like an era where there was high unemployment, and I kind of wanted to get on the ladder to some sort of career, and so I went for the interview and I got the job. So I decided that I would take it. I took the job, actually, because I was promised a little bit of college work. I'd said to them, I did want to continue with my education, but I also wanted to work, and would they offer anything? And if the they hadn't have offered it, I said I wasn't really interested in taking the job. So they said, yes, we'll do a day release. But the assistant design manager had come from the Stockport area and had trained at Stockport College, and he thought that college was, you know, had a good reputation. So I was sent there, but I couldn't drive, I had no car. It was two buses, two trains, 2-hour trip there, 2-hour trip back, and there was no qualification at the end of it. And after 6 months, the college said that they weren't taking any day release students anyway, so I had to stop, and that was the end of the you know, extra education that I thought I might get. I was given the title of trainee designer, and I was paid £17 a week. Clearly remember that. It was quite paltry even for 1977. I would give my mum £5 of that because I paid board, and then there was a little bit, maybe £1.50 taken out for tax. And I actually can't remember what I spent the first pay packet on, because I'd been earning a little bit more doing a Saturday job in a cafe, so it didn't feel like a big treat to get that pay packet. It just felt like at the end of the day, by the time I'd paid board, I was left with just the same amount. So it was just, for me, a continuation of trying to earn a little bit of money. The first, actually, when I got interviewed, what they said to me was, there'll be many, many times in this trainee period where I would be bored. And they were quite right. For the first 2 years, I was mixing paints. In those days, before computer design, we had to paint out the designs on large sheets of squared paper, and each little square represented a tuft of carpet, and they all had to be painted. And we had to mix our own paints. So I spent many an hour in the corner of the room by a sink mixing paints, and I would paint them all on a strip of card, wait for them to dry, take them over to the senior designers. They would look at them against the ponds of yarn that we had, and if they weren't quite right, they'd send me back to mix it again. And I was doing a little bit of design. Obviously, I was getting time to learn the craft, but I was the general dog's body, and it was accepted that that's what was part of the training. Eventually, after 2 years, I stood my ground and said, that's it, I'm not mixing paints for anybody anymore. You can all mix your own paints. I'm just doing my own paints. And my boss, the design manager, was quite flustered, and but he accepted it. And I made me think, why didn't I say this earlier? I just needed to take a stand. So at that point, I think I was probably feeling quite confident that I was doing this, not quite the same job as some of the senior ones, because I was still learning. I was happy to learn. They were very good at what they did. They were still teaching me tricks of the trade and things, how to make my work better, how to look at things differently. I was still learning how to make things commercial, you know, being part of the team. But I felt confident enough to know that I'd learnt quite a bit and that I needed to be taken seriously. I remember the marches. I remember them on TV. I was quite young. I was 18 in 1977. And prior to that, I hadn't been very politically minded. I'd just been doing the usual sports, pastimes, work, school, that kind of thing. But I think when I got to work, I realised that those ladies at a point, I was working alongside men who were paid a lot more than me. And it was accepted, and everybody was paid differently, and you weren't allowed to discuss your pay, so nobody really knew what anybody else was earning. But you could tell by lifestyles that people had more money than some. And I think, yes, there was a general feeling at work amongst the men that it was all stuff and nonsense, what the women were doing, almost a bit of a joke. And if I ever stuck up for myself, I became a bit of a caricature of the women's lib, and that, you know, the almost a bit of a figure of fun, but I didn't let that deter me. None of that stopped me. When I was 23, I got married and went from Haworth to Walsh. And that just was fodder for the office, because I was then known as Bolshy Walshy. And I think they were just waiting for a name that they could call me. I mean, it was all in good fun. And actually, I was quite proud of that, because I thought, yeah, well, I do want to be Bolshy. There's reason to be Bolshy, and I'll continue to be that way until I get what I want and be where I think I should be in this environment. So, I mean, I would constantly ask for pay rises, and usually I'd be given them. I've got to say, you know, the design director, although he would have liked to have got away with paying me next to nothing, he would take my case to a managing director and always come back with some sort of pay rise. I mean, he did say, you're always asking for pay rises, and I would say, oh, I continue to do so until I get to equal pay with the men. And at one point, he did say that, you know, you do know you're the highest paid female in the company, to which I just retorted, well, shame on you then, because I thought of all the women who were working in the company, not in the design department, but they were on less pay than me, and I thought I was on poor pay. He was very supportive, my husband. He was same age as me, well, a year older. So we'd grown up with that same feeling that men and women are equal. And we had a very equal partnership at home. There was no me doing the cleaning, me doing the childcare. We did it together. And he was very supportive of everything I did. But he couldn't get involved. He had his job, I had mine, I fought my case at work. But yes, and my family were too. Everybody agreed. I have an older sister, a younger brother. I grew up knowing that women had an equal place in life. My mother was, you know, had a responsible job. I wonder if that helped me to feel strong enough to always argue my case. I have a first child in 1984, mm-hmm. and I went back to work after having him, mostly because of that ethos that my mother actually encouraged me to go back. She said a career is important, so she helped me arrange childcare. Being in the childcare field herself, she found me a childminder. But it was difficult, very difficult actually, because I was working in a male environment that expected you to have that male frame of mind. So to be concerned about your child or to be bothered about maybe a sick child at home wasn't reach. It was almost a sign of weakness. So I did find it a strain, and when I had my second child, I decided to stop work for a while. Partly because of that, but partly because I wasn't paid enough to pay two lots of childcare. I would have been working for nothing. So I thought, take time out, see if we can manage. And I did take 3.5 years out, and in that time I had a daughter. And then when she was 18 months old, I got back into part-time work. I had maternity leave with my first child, and I was due to go back after 7 months in the new year. And in the meantime, I'd been offered 2 afternoons a week at Blackburn College teaching on the textile course. And it was actually quite well paid, and I'd started to think that doing that for 2 afternoons a week would keep the wolf from the door, and maybe I didn't need to go back full-time work. So I handed my resignation in at Gaskell, said I wouldn't be coming back, and they asked me to come in, talk about it. Well, I thought I owed them that, so that's what I did. And they tried to persuade me to stay and ask me what would it take to keep me. I hadn't really thought, so I just threw out, well, I don't want to work full-time, I just want to work mornings, and I want a pay rise. And I left them slightly speechless, and I said, I'll leave you gentlemen to think about that. And I got up and left and went home. And I was being interviewed by the managing director and my design director. And my design director came up to my house shortly after and said that I'd left the managing director absolutely speechless, but he'd agreed to do that, but on condition that I terminated my contract. So I'd worked 6 or 7 years previous to that and started a new contract. And also that after 6 months, I should return full time. And I was only young. I was 25. I wasn't sure whether it was legal or not, so I went ahead because it did seem quite a good deal. And I thought, well, there's more security in that job. The college job was term time only. I wouldn't have got paid throughout the summer holidays. And they also renewed it every year, and I wasn't guaranteed to get the college job the year after. So I went ahead, went back to Gaskell. But I found out later that terminating my contract was illegal, but it was too late at that point. But it did mean that when I stopped to have work, to go on maternity leave with my second child, I wasn't paid maternity pay because I hadn't worked there 2 years on my new contract. So I gave up my maternity pay. That was a good point about not being offered that sort of a deal to a man. It just, it wouldn't have been in the same context. A man would come back, and if he wanted part-time, he would have got part-time or not, but surely wouldn't have been offered a new contract. I think they had in mind that I'd just got married, had one child. People usually have more than one child. And I think they were maybe thinking that if I got pregnant again and had maternity leave again, then they'd be without me for another 6-7 months and have to pay. They'd obviously thought this through. I was so naive, I hadn't realised that they had this other scenario going on in the background of trying to protect themselves, and I came off worse for that. When I was 2021, a family friend had asked if I could do some freelance design work just to help him get started on a different tack. He had a retail carpet shop and he wanted to do work with pubs and hotels and offer a small carpet design range. So I did that, and then so many years later, when I had my third child, he approached me again and said, are you interested in working for me, because I've got a design centre now set up and I could choose my own hours, which suited me. So that was a great way of getting back into a field that I'd done all my training in that suited a little bit more family life. So I went back to work. I went to work for him 2 evenings and 1 day a week, which I did for 2 years. And then for a further 4 years, I swapped the 2 evenings for 2 days a week. And that's because the day nursery had opened up in Rishton, which meant that I could put my youngest child in the day nursery. The elder two were at school. So that suited me too. So for the further 4 years, I worked 2 days a week, and any extra days that he may have wanted me to, but that wasn't so often because that did mess up childcare arrangements. When I was working for this family friend, I'd been back to Gaskell because they had a machine that made small carpet samples and I needed some of those. So I was in regular touch with them because occasionally we'd need some of these samples, and I went back to pick some of these samples up, and my old assistant design manager asked me if I was keen on coming back to them full time. He said that he needed somebody. Well, I said, really, no, that doesn't fit in with the family. Full time is a bit tricky for me. But he persuaded me to eventually, and it did take me about 3 months. I thought about it. I had to try and line up childcare. I did ask if they would let me work 9 till 3 school hours, but they said no, that would be setting a precedent, although I argued that it hadn't. It wouldn't be, because I knew of 2 women who worked in the offices who worked school hours. But he said, well, that doesn't fit in with the design studio. But eventually, because my youngest by then was 7, I thought it would be good to get back working full time. It would provide a bit more income and more options. So I agreed to go back to Gaskell. When I returned on quite a good salary. I would say it was slightly above average for this area, which was encouraging. And I was given the title of senior designer. Also, they had 2 other female designers. They were trainees straight from A-levels. But it was nice to have a mix. And we had a secretary who was a young woman. So, yeah, it was a general mix between men and women, and it felt more enlightened. I soon realised that that was probably not really the case. There was still an attitude where it was mostly dominated by men in the senior positions, and it was a bit of a boys' club. And you hope if you stay there long enough as a male employee, you'll get promotion. If you stay there long enough as a woman, you'll just stay the same. You had to be absolutely outstanding to even get to something like a team leader. And that was about the highest status that any woman had got to when I returned. I applied for the design director's job. Our design director had retired, and we had a design manager at that point, but he was probably around about 2 years off retiring himself, so they decided to get a new design director. Previous to that, the sales director had taken the position, which wasn't working. I already knew, though, that there was a man from younger than me who I'd worked with previously, moved to a sister company, who'd been given the job, but they had to appear to be fair, and they had to advertise the job to the rest of the employees. I had to apply for it knowing all this, because if I hadn't, and I could, the thing was, I couldn't tell anybody how I'd come by this information without getting somebody else into trouble, which I didn't want to do. So I applied for the job, because if I hadn't, they'd have said, well, you know, you don't put your money where your mouth is, you want promotion, but you won't apply for the job. So I went through the rigmarole. Of course, I didn't get it, because I knew who already had it. But I had to appear indignant. I was indignant, but it was for show, mostly. And it was also tongue-in-cheek, because I knew that their hands were tied, they'd already picked the design director to be. So I said, this was your chance to put your money where your mouth was. You talk about promoting women. Here was your chance, and you haven't done. And later, I was speaking to the sales director, and he said, well, I don't think that there's any woman here who is, you know, good enough to be promoted to that level. Which I was furious, and I just said, any woman who walks past here, because he had a glass-fronted office leading out into the corridor, the first person to walk past here would make a better director than some of the male directors here. I could guarantee that. But that was a bit of a shock, really, because that was, again, an ethos that had been bubbling along the surface, under the surface, amongst the men. And the designer, the sales director who told me that was my age. So you couldn't even blame them being from an older generation. I would say this was late 90s. That was a company that they brought in to assess the efficiency, I suppose, of the company, and to see if personalities were getting in the way of good work. The consultant who came in, he did acknowledge, because he talked to me and he did acknowledge that there were shortcomings in our company with regards to the women. He acknowledged that women weren't given a chance to be promoted, certainly weren't in higher positions. All the men in the company who were managers had a company car. There was not one woman who owned a company car. But he did tell me we weren't the worst company, because he'd just been to an engineering company and they'd shown him an office layout. They were revamping the office and they were so proud of it, he said, that they'd put names on the desks. And he said there was a name with, say, Stephen, a name with a Peter, a name with a John, and then another desk with the girls. And they weren't even given names. And that was another company. It wasn't our company. But he was saying, you know, so it could be worse, but he did acknowledge that we as a company weren't doing the best we could for the women. I was asked at one point to be assistant design manager, which I was. Actually, this was before the incident with applying to be design director. And at that point, I'd asked for a company car. I said, well, I'll do the job, but I need a car because I was expected to go. We had a sister company in Skipton and one in Banbury Bridge, and I was expected to go between the two, checking off work. I had a very responsible position, and I was always on the lookout for a company car to borrow to get me to these places. Previously, the assistant manager had always had a company car. So this position, you know, was well known for coming with a company car, and I didn't get one. So I turned the job down, and they said at the time, well, you know, this could look good on your CV, and in 2 years when the design manager retires, you'll become design manager. So I went along with it. I thought, well, it would look good on my CV. So there I was promoted to assistant manager, but that's where I stayed because later they brought the design director in above me, slotted in above me, which took me down to a third in line instead of second in line. The design director, design manager, and me. And because the design director was younger than me and they'd chosen him for that job, I felt like my pathway was blocked at that point. So I got an offer again within a few months of that. I got an offer to move and leave Gaskell, and I took it up because I didn't see a future where I was. Felt like I'd worked for 10 years with this career pathway in mind, and it sort of got blocked off right at the end, so I left then. I actually went back to work for the family friend. I felt like a boomerang. I'd gone from one to the other back again. But he just wanted me to run the studio. He had a studio. There was nobody else but me, so I was manager of nobody but me. But I became creative manager for him. So anything to do with carpet design and anything creative, I had a say. And actually, that job was very good. And the family friend really appreciated me, and I felt valued there. Felt like I'd finally got to a point where I was where I should be, but in a slightly smaller company, and obviously I wasn't in charge of anybody, but it still felt good. I felt happy to have got there, and I was in my mid-40s at that point. Unfortunately, I was only in the position with the family friends for 4 years, and he got the administrators came in and took over right at the start of the recession in 2008. And it was such a shame because the banks just pulled on him, even though he got a good order book. And Jack Straw, Member of Parliament for Blackburn, even brought up his case on Question Time on the TV programme because he was a good friend of this chap. So, but that was it. We were all asked for a job. I then got a job for 18 months at a company called Bulls of New Zealand in Oakley. It was a bit of a step down, but it was a job. And then I got made redundant from there. So I was 50 at that point, and that's when I decided to go freelance. I didn't have any option. I had one offer, but it was to move down to Wiltshire. And that wasn't practical. So I thought, well, I'll give it a go. I'll do my own thing. And I had a few criteria as to how I should go about it. One, if I made more than I could make claiming what was the dole, I don't know what the word is for it now, I would carry on. And I did. My next goal was if I can earn more than minimum wage, I'll carry on, which I did. And after that, I earned just a little bit more than minimum wage, so I carried on. And I've since worked for various companies, done quite well. I wouldn't say it's a lucrative way of working, but it's kept me in the career I was trained for, and I'm still doing that now. I think women today possibly have a little bit more support. They know the system is with them. It may not always work that way, but they know they can fall back on some help. When I was working, there was no one to fall back on. There was nobody to... We didn't have personnel departments. You either spoke to your boss or you kept quiet and hoped that your boss was a reasonable chap. So I think in that way that women these days do have a little bit more of a chance of finding some sort of a a good lucrative career. It's not all about money, but it's important to know that you're valued in the same way as men are. And also that, you know, if you don't want the traditional get married, have children, be supported by a husband, you can make your way in the world. You can fund your own living expenses and your own life because you are paid in the way that men are paid. I would have gone to university. I would have pushed on with that. And then that would have given me more options later. So that when you do have a family, and I did want to do that. I did. Well, I was happy. I was in love. I wanted to get married and I wanted a family. But it would have helped me to have options after the family had grown up a little bit as to what I did. Having a degree to back you up for me would have been, you know, a possibility of going into teaching maybe. But I don't live with regrets. That's the only thing that I would have liked to have had, just a little bit more of formal qualifications behind me. I don't think so. I think I don't want to bore you anyway. I could talk forever, but I think that probably gives you a synopsis of the life of a carpet designer starting in 1977. I think my career has been a good one on the whole. I've travelled all over the world. I've met people from all walks of life who I wouldn't have had that opportunity had I chosen the office job that the careers advisor told me to take. And for that reason, I'm very grateful. I've worked in an environment of colour and design which has been exciting. I've spent many days and weeks in London talking to top designers and architects. I've done great installations. I did the tower, not Eiffel Tower, but the Montparnasse Tower in Paris, carpeted that all out with scenes of Paris through clouds. The jobs I've had have been so creative and so interesting that it's exactly what I wanted to do. I may have suffered a little bit along the way to get where I wanted to be, but I can't deny that I've been to China, I've been to Canada, I've been to America. I've been sat at the Chicago Yacht Club drinking champagne with people and wondering how on earth I got there because of my job. It's been fascinating. I've been in, you know, factories in China at the back of Beyond and wondering how I got there too, but equally fascinating. So I can't complain about anything and I've no regrets. And some of the things that happened to me along the way regarding, you know, the imbalance of power between men and women, I've been quite funny because I was strong enough to treat it that way and hold my own and power through it anyway and feel quite satisfied and good that I achieved what I wanted to achieve. So, big learning curve. Nothing's ever wasted in life. I never feel like a bad experience should be dwelled upon. You always learn something from it. I guess I'm quite a positive kind of person.